Welcome to this week's episode of Uncovered for Pole Dancers, a podcast created by pole dancers for pole dancers. I'm your host, Stephanie Quinn. This week, we are continuing on the conversation with Mon and Ross all about red flags or valid concerns. So we're picking up where we left off in terms of communication in relationships and how that can help with your pole dancing journey or what that might look like in action. So let's get ready to dive on in.
So, I mean, in terms of their concerns, so sitting there and listening, what type of valid concerns may your partner or the person that you're working with in the relationship have?
And if you don't think they're valid concerns, that might be indicating a really strong values clash. And I would be really curious to know whether or not this couple has difficulties outside of this pole issue as well. Do they also struggle with insecurities show up with other things? Do they also struggle to communicate about other issues? Because I think you would find that this pole issue is the current gridlock issue, but the communication patterns, the insecurities, the underlying meanings and difficulties in the relationship would filter out into other areas as well.
Interesting. And as like you say that, like reflecting on my previous relationship, yeah, some of those things definitely come up.
Same for me.
Yeah. Well, I think you said it earlier. It's like if somebody's feeling a certain way about something, it makes it valid, right? Mm. Because that's their truth.
Mm. Good point.
And you therefore, to your point, you need to ask the questions to understand that and hopefully find a way to provide them the information necessary to move their viewpoint around it. You know, and if that's, yeah, you like to, you know, post your dancing on social media so that you can, not so much from an extrinsic perspective of getting the validation, but to document your growth as an individual per se. And, you know, they might, if you haven't had the conversation, your partner's going, well, yeah, they want all these other men to see them and they want to do this. And you're just going, well, no, I just want to be able to capture that journey and have it somewhere. And, you know, it's a platform that allows that to happen as opposed to just keeping it in your photo reel.
It's a creative expression too. Yeah. Mm. I often ask myself this question when I was a pole dancer because I don't pole now and I haven't for years. And I don't use my pole dancing page very often anymore. Mm. And I often wonder, like, am I doing this for validation? Am I seeking validation? But funnily enough, most of my followers were females and most of them were pole dancers. And we just follow each other for ideas. We follow each other for empowerment. We follow each other for creative expression.
I see so many people, like our students, post, let's say, Central Flow, like any of our choreo classes, and they'll tag us in it. So then we'll get what people comment on it. And most of it's just other people in the class or other members of our community.
You look awesome.
You look so good. Damn. And there's just like all like flame emojis or like chili emojis. It's just a good thing to liken it to. A lot of discussions I've had about your mullet is like the people who love your mullet are generally other men. Right? They're like, oh, look at your mullet.
Oh, with the conversations you've had with
people?
Yeah,
like it's usually like we'd say it's like
I never got those.
Men are like hyping each other up. This is the exact same thing. It's like pole dancers are just hyping each other up. And that's where the validation's coming through. Because the number of like when generally speaking from what I've seen, when let's say we've gone viral on Facebook, it generally happens on Facebook more than Instagram. When we get male comments, they're all just like straight up dance on my pole or like, yeah, they're just.
I never got any of that.
Yeah. I only ever had it on like the Facebook account. But and only ever when we get viral, we seem to get in this like loop of particular nationalities and then the male population.
See, my pole page was private too because of my muggle career. All of my accounts are private and I was very selective of who I allowed to follow me. And if I had like what appeared to be a seedy male come in to slip into my DM, my like whatever you call it, asking for, you know, to connect, it was just a straight up no thanks, mate.
And you know what? Like, I guess if you are putting it out there and that's the type of feedback that you're getting, and for you, you're happy to accept and take on that feedback, more power to you. Like, that's you, that's your decision. It's not saying it's wrong if that's what you like doing. Like, that's not what
I would be very curious, though, if you are getting those kind of comments on your socials and your partner is seeing those comments. For me, that would be a valid concern, you know. But if your partner's throwing out at you, you love it. If you're getting really narky comments, like, you're doing it for male attention, you love it, blah, 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 and you can honestly say to yourself, that's not true, I don't know how you're going to move on from that.
Yeah, well, I think that's where the individual needs to take a deep breath and actually think about it for a minute to go, why am I posting these things on social media? And I love the idea of doing it from an artistic expression perspective, because God knows, you know, we've been doing that for thousands of years as humans, and it's a good thing to create and share it and inspire and do those sorts of things. But if you're somebody posting a story or a reel or whatever, and you're checking it every 5 minutes to see how many likes it's gotten or if there's more comments, then you need to be aware of that for the conversation you need to have with your partner. Because if you're not clear with why you're behaving in that way, then clearly the conversation you're going to have about what you're valuing and why you're acting in a certain way doesn't hold the weight that it needs to make progress.
I think it's really important to just clarify as well, different individuals and different couples are going to have different values and understanding and expectations around this. So me and my partner, I had my pole page for very specific reasons, and my partner and I talked about what our expectations were going to be in the relationship and what that looked like, and I was happy with those and I respected those. But I also had female friends who are strippers and have stripping pages, and the amount of male attention they get is great for them because it feeds their career. Customer. And they had partners who they also had very open communication with. They were okay with that career choice, and they were happy with that as a couple because their values aligned and they understood, you know, each other well. So it doesn't really matter what your values are. It just matters that you and your partner are discussing them and that you have and that you are aligned on what is okay in your relationship and what your boundaries are in that relationship.
And I reflect, so when we were talking just then, it takes an element of self-reflection to be able to go, why, if I'm seeking out this male attention, why am I doing that? And I know as my previous relationship was ending, or before I realized it was ending, I was definitely seeking out other attention. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I didn't understand what was going on. And now that I've got the tools from lots of therapy, I've got those tools, I can see that I wasn't being served. My needs weren't being served, and I was not getting the attention I needed in my current relationship. So it definitely made sense that I was seeking it because there was something missing, and I can see that now. I couldn't see it at the time. So it does take a little bit of self-reflection to be able to achieve that. And I was about to go into red flags, but Ross wants to say something.
No, I was going to elaborate on your point, Mon. It's, if there's plenty of people who, especially men, who want the world to know that their partner's hot as shit or that they're sexy ass. So,
or who tell their friends, my partner's a stripper, even if they're not, because they do pole dancing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that just highlights the importance of that conversation. And, you know, the females or whoever, you know, people are doing that and it just gels nicely with their partner's, you know, perspective on sharing those sorts of things. But again, I don't think that's the majority of people, unfortunately. That's why we're here having this conversation, right? So,
but that guy is a secure guy who is secure in his relationship, who loves the fact that he's got a hot partner, and he loves the fact that everyone else thinks she's hot too, because he knows that she's not going home with any of them. She's going home with him.
I still debate that to a degree. I have a feeling that there's like a bit of compensation going. They're not particularly secure, so they want the validation of everybody else to say, you know, oh, look how hot my wife is. And then people go, she's so hot, man. And I'm like, that makes me feel better. And so it's like, good work, man.
Go, we all just need so much validation, don't we? It's human.
Anything you can take from this podcast episode, How can we validate one another?
That's why we're sitting here.
How can we validate ourselves more so we don't need other people's
validation? Well, yeah, and that's really hard, especially in the world of social media, and all that stuff is just becoming more and more and more. And, I mean, there's that discussion around porn and the porn of which young children or, like, young adolescents are now consuming, and a lot of it is more fetish-related, you know, whether it's choking or cutting or, like, whatever it is, anal, all those things. And
wow, this conversation took a short time.
They say it because, like, that's now coming out. That's what they're expecting.
We need more stimulation because
we're coming so desensitized to what is okay just to have starfish sex in bed. Like even being a teenager, it's like, oh, you're a starfish?
Oh, my God. I remember the starfish stigma.
It's like, oh, you don't, like, do crazy things? Yeah. It's like, hey, I just want to enjoy it. Man, I didn't even know how to orgasm at that point in my life.
So much pressure.
Like, that's – you might even be feeling pressure from your partner to be a certain thing, but pressure from the community of which you're in to – explore that sexy side. We've definitely had, you know, we embrace whatever it is you want to be in our studio. But for some of the attendees or the members, it's like, can I just come in and somebody not be in a G-string? So it goes, our values are all different. And as a community, we need to respect that. And I guess in our relationships, we need to respect that. But the important part in the relationship is it problematic, and what are actual red flags? So what should people be looking for as a red flag? And I guess it comes down to your values.
Well, I think it's a really big red flag if you're trying to communicate your values to your partner and they're totally disregarding those.
Yeah.
Their values are the ones that are important, and you are expected to align with those, and you're not allowed to have a voice or a say. That's a big red flag. Because even if you have different values, you still need to feel like it's a safe space to explore those with your partner and what that means for your relationship. You know, so if Jono and I think differently on a subject, for example, our biggest goal is to work out what does that mean for us? Like, how do we work with this? What does it mean for our goals? What does it mean for our relationship? It's not about who's going to win the war, who's right, who's wrong. It's about, what are your values? What are my values? What are our relationship values? And do they align?
Something just came into my mind as you're talking about that. And, you know, the predominantly the clientele in poll are female. And when you're like, oh, they're not listening to my values and they're not being accepted, you just need to fit into my box. We've still got evolution here, and we've still got generational habits of the wife is at home, the man goes out and get the job. We're breaking those, definitely, but some of those things still exist depending on how that person has grown up. That's what came to mind for me. It's like, no, you need to fit into my box. I'm going to go out and get the money. You do what I tell you to do. And, you know, our parents, like my mom definitely fell into that of like, I just have to do what's best for the family and what suits my husband. You know, it definitely comes across in a lot of families. So a lot of our parents are still dealing with some of that evolutionary stuff. And there's so many women who are getting to the point of the kids leaving and going, who am I now? And that's generally our mums is where you're seeing those behaviors. So is it just normal for us as females in those situations to go, okay, yeah, I'll
just
do that.
Align with the expectations.
Because that's generationally and evolutionary. Can I word? What society tells us is normal. But when you do poll, you're doing something so much further outside of societal views. Anyway, I don't know. That was my take from some of the things that you just said there. That's what come into mind and why we might just go, yeah, okay. Because we've seen, you know, it might be mums, aunties, you know, sisters just fit into those boxes.
Yeah. Another red flag, continuing that part of it, if you are being told what you can and can't do, like that, you know, the example you shared earlier that, you know, somebody's considered quitting pole before because it's clearly putting too much stress on a relationship. It's like, man, if you can't partake in safe, normal activities like that without it causing an issue, I think that's a red flag, like personally, because to your point earlier, you're probably not talking about the underlying issue here. There's probably something else going on. And, you know, I mean, if that was the case and you find yourself in that situation, the first question is, yeah, like, what are you afraid of happening if I pole dance? And, you know, depending how mature your partner is and how in touch with themselves are, they'll obviously give you a variety of different reasons, whether it's, yeah, I don't know what people think about me. I think you might end up finding somebody else, blah, blah, blah. I think no one should ever have that ability to tell you what you should and shouldn't do.
And relationship anxiety is a real thing. Like a lot of people, I don't know what the statistics are, but that's what come, like I very much had relationship anxiety at the start of our relationship, which is what caused therapy, which what caused us to be better communicators. But I was so worried that you were going to go cheat on me and leave me. Like that was the concern I had. And we had to talk through a lot of that and what my concerns were and why they were concerns for me. And then I had to get support in therapy to help that. So
I would be really curious to understand, knowing that the internal stuff that you were dealing with now in retrospect, what were some of your behaviors that came from that insecurity? Like how were you behaving in the relationship?
Definitely checked your phone before. Like that has definitely been a thing. What else was I doing? Just more like when you went out, like my whole behavior just became like I would probably loathe on that when he was out. Like when he would get drunk, I'm like, okay, here we go. Like that was where concern would come from. Like if he was out at a work thing, because I've seen what happened, like, and my concerns and my anxiety were all validated based on things I'd seen happen in the past. You know, you go to a work Christmas party, people get drunk and their whole fucking sexual desire comes out. Like the amount of people that you've seen, you're just like, ooh, okay, that's going to be awkward on Monday. But those are things that came out for me. So, yeah, it was more, I think probably the biggest thing, I don't know if there was anything that outrightly like, I think a lot of it was internal. I don't know how much of it actually impacted you.
Not in a great way, but it definitely – it was one of those things, and again, I was not particularly internalized myself at that point in time. I didn't really understand self-reflection. I definitely, you know, had to grow and follow Steph on the same journey of going like, okay, well, how am I? And, you know, I can say I was probably pretty damn selfish at that point in my life. So, you know, I didn't.
Everybody's like, Ross is so amazing. I'm like, he once was a douche.
Yeah, I didn't consider a lot of people in my thoughts and my actions, and it took our relationship and that journey that we went on to actually go, when I do that, that impacts Steph like that, or that, you know, does this or that, and, you know, how am I judging based on, you know, my own thoughts, let alone that's that person's life story and that they're allowed to have their own, you know, individual ideas and, you know, their own sort of situation. So, I think it was more so that I probably saw it, but in the early days I probably disregarded it. And it, as we grew together, it became, okay, yeah, maybe I shouldn't do some of those sorts of things. But at the same time, like, it, you know, there was a long part of that process where I knew that I'd, you know, been dedicated to you and that nothing was going to happen, but it took you quite a bit of time to get to that. And I tried my best not to
tell me he's going to cheat on me when I was 35.
Yeah. And then, but then I tried my best not to allow that to impact how I lived my life. So knowing that, yeah, if I went out and had drinks with the boys, you were probably going to be sitting at home being like, all right, what's he doing? Like, when's he going to come home? And I'm like, I know I'm not doing anything. Like, I know I'm not going to be a bad guy in any of this situation. So I don't want to not do those sorts of things.
And one thing I have to say, which I did not expect this conversation to get this deep into relationship, but I am an open book, so I'm not bothered by it. But one thing I do need to say, which could be when we're thinking about our partners and maybe the reactions of which they're having, is now he's like, I'm going to have drinks with the boys. I'm like, yes, go for a bath. I could do this. I could do this. But I am so much more comfortable in my own skin now. And I feel so much more individual. Like, I am an individual. I'm not defined by this relationship anymore, which to start off with, I definitely felt defined. I've done so much of my own self-discovery that I'm like, oh, if he leaves, that's cool. Just figure out what it is we need to do. And I'll just go, like, I will survive that because I'm resilient and I am so much more comfortable in my own skin. I don't know who I said it to recently, but I'm like, I end up not in a relationship in the near future. I still love you and I don't plan for that to be the case. But if I did, I would be okay on my own. Because I now know what it is that I want in life. I now understand my values better. And if it wasn't working or if you didn't want to be with me, it would be cool. Like, go do whatever you want to do. It would still hurt. Like, I don't want to take away from that. And I still don't want that to be the situation. But I would just go to therapy more.
I think that, like, what you guys just described is a really nice example of as well how two people can work through differences.
Yeah.
Because it's not like what we're saying here is not that your partner's not allowed to have insecurities or your partner's not allowed to have strong feelings or it's not, and you're not allowed to be seeking a sense of self or all these things, but it's about understanding what each other's process is. And what happened for you, Steph, is you unlearned a lot of your, I guess, cognitive biases that you, like your experiences in the past gave you a lens of how to see a relationship. And you, what we do as humans is we, when we have a story, we seek out evidence that supports that story, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we disregard any information that tells us that story is not true. So by the sounds of things, what was happening is your story was people cheat and my husband's going to leave me. So anything that you could find to support that story, you were latching onto. And then anything he did that showed you that he's trustworthy and he loves you and he's in those relationships, you were like, disregard that. It doesn't like, fit with my
where's
story.
The bitch? She's in your story somewhere, in your messages somewhere.
Like you went and learned about those cognitive biases. Yeah. You both learned about how to communicate your anxieties to each other. And rather than disregarding each other's anxieties, you learned how to work on with those. Mm-hmm. So Ross learned, okay, when I do X, Y, Z, this triggers Steph. So I'm going to be more mindful of that and I'm going to respect her with that. So you grew as a couple through being really open and being really vulnerable with each other, which is very hard to do when you have experienced trust issues in the past. But by being vulnerable, opening up to each other and allowing each other to be a part of that growth, you worked through it together. And now, you know, those pillars of trust are there and they're like, I think what we're talking about here ultimately all comes down to trust.
Yeah.
And how much do you trust that you can have these open, honest communication conversations with your partner, and how much do you trust that you can work on that together in a really positive way?
And I think if you can't, if the ability to communicate is not there, then
you can go and learn.
You can go and learn. I was gonna be like, fucking red flag. But you can learn, and I think that's the biggest thing. Like, we sucked at communicating. Well, hands down, 100%. And it was all learned. These are all skills. It's fucking hard skills to learn. I'm the only one dropping F-bombs and anal bombs today. Okay, good. I'm like, I've gone all sorts of places.
Being vulnerable is terrifying.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying. You know, going up and telling somebody how you actually feel about it is terrifying. And if, because you don't want to be disregarded and you don't want to be, you know, made to feel stupid or, you know, invalidated or whatever. So, you know, I think that's, it's so hard. And that's where you've got to trust the process to a degree and know that if you tell the truth and if you, you know, be honest and you share your feelings, then it will work out positively in the end. you know, regardless of whether that's you both go on a journey and you both overcome it, or you actually realize that this is a person that isn't compatible with me because here I am trying to be, you know, the person moving this forward and we're just not going anywhere. So,
and that might be where some of the vulnerability comes from, is you're going to be vulnerable, you're going to share, and they're not going to change. And if they're not going to change, you know, depending on what your situation is, that might mean that that relationship is no longer, or you need to figure out what that relationship is, and then you have to face some hard truths that the life of which you are currently living might not be that life in the future. Or you need to go, okay, I'm going to live with this, but I know it's going to be a challenge. But I want to take the vulnerability back. Like, every single person who's probably listening to this podcast has done a pole dancing class, and that was an element of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And we walked in the door not knowing what we were going into, and that exposure to that environment made that vulnerability less. And now it is whatever it is for you as a pole dancer, and what you've made that for yourself.
You got to be brave in your relationship.
Yeah.
And allow. Scary. But you know what? It's interesting. The research actually shows that it only takes one partner to create change.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of the time partners sit back and they're constantly, they're like, I'm not the problem. I need them to change. Or they're like, I'm willing to do it, but they're not coming along with the journey. Mm-hmm. So then they hold back on their vulnerability, or they hold back on showing love and connection and things like that, because they're worried it's not going to be reciprocated. They're worried their partner's not going to come along for that journey. So, but what all the research in couples therapy actually shows, that if one partner starts making positive change, it starts communicating their feelings, it starts validating the other person's concerns, starts showing love in a really real and behavioral way, it breaks down the walls of the other partner, who's also really worried about how vulnerable they can be, or whether their vulnerabilities are going to be accepted, validated, you know, worked with. So if you are in a relationship that has potential, you can start making that change, and eventually, hopefully, the other partner will start to break down their walls as well. What else can happen is if you're in a relationship, a really toxic relationship with a narcissistic person, they start using your vulnerabilities against you, and that's where it can become, that's the biggest red flag, is if you are trying to be really open and honest and vulnerable with your partner and they have a total lack of empathy, they start throwing this stuff back in your face, they're not able to, or they start to manipulate you, they start to try and control what you are and are not doing, any kind of really confusing behavior like from your partner where you just kind of feel like either you can't win or you're being set up to fail, or like all of those kind of things that we all know and can think of a time when we felt this uncomfortable feeling of this person is not right for me. I feel uncomfortable. There's something toxic here. You can't always put your finger on it when you're in the middle of it. But, and that, you know, we can get into why we miss those red flags, like if we want to get really technical. But basically, if you feel like you're in a really one-sided relationship and that things aren't progressing and things aren't getting better, and you're starting to feel worse about yourself, you're starting to feel more unheard, you're starting to feel really confused and conflicted, that's a really big red flag that this is not just about pole. This is not just about you finding yourself. This is a really toxic relationship, and I'm guessing that you're seeing it in lots of other aspects of your life as well.
So why do people choose, or why do people miss red flags?
I'm so glad you asked.
I know you opened me up for a very well timed question.
So it comes back to what we were talking about before with you, Steph, with those confirmation biases that we have as humans, right? So often when we get into a relationship with a really toxic person, it's very rare that you meet someone and they're like, I'm quite a manipulative person, so be careful. Like, can I just check your phone on the first date, make sure you're not seeing anyone else? Like, I don't know about you guys, but I haven't met anyone that's quite that overt. So when we first meet someone, it's all great, right? These people are really good at making you feel good about yourself. Yeah. You know, there's the love bombing, there's I've never met anyone like you. There's the, you know, I'll never find, and it happens really quickly and really intensely. So it draws us in very, very quickly. And then we get hit by what's called the primacy effect. So we decide what this person and this relationship is going to be like based on those initial interactions. Mm-hmm. So we move forward into the relationship with that lens. Like, this person's going to be a great partner. They're going to love me so hard, you know, all of this stuff.
They've never met anybody like me.
Yeah, I'm so special, and they're going to make me feel special. They're going to give me all that love and validation that I crave so strongly. And so then our cognitive biases kick in. We put our red glasses on and we see everything in the relationship, and we latch onto things that feed that story and we disregard the things that don't. And the thing with red flag behavior is, it's not like you just wake up one day and someone's like, okay, you're not allowed to see your friends and family. I want access to your bank accounts. I'm going to take control of your phone, blah, 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 blah. They happen in slowly. Little dribs and drabs. It happens slowly over time. These people are really clever at manipulating you, dragging you down, subtly putting you down, whittling away at your self-esteem, making you feel bad about yourself.
And they probably sometimes don't even – they're not conscious sometimes that they're doing it in this particular way.
I think you probably find people who are doing it through insecurity, so maybe it is a little bit more subconscious, but you've also got people who are very clever and very good at doing this, and they seek out vulnerable people that are very good targets. But we put up with little things that make us feel a little bit uncomfortable because we're still searching for those things that we saw originally, our primacy effect, right? But they could love me so hard, but they're jealous because they love me. They're, you know, all we feed ourselves these things that fit with our story. By the time we wake up and realize I have no control now, or I'm too far and I'm too deep in, that's where we start to go, oh my God, how do I get out of this? Like, I'm stuck.
Yeah, well, the reality of accepting a different truth all of a sudden has to change your perception of yourself, right? So you would all of a sudden start to becoming like, how did I get in this relationship? How did I make such a mistake? If this is actually true and this person isn't the person I thought that they were, then all of a sudden I'm an idiot.
Yeah. You know, what does that say about me?
Exactly. So
I'm weak.
Yeah. It's natural that people will also try and overlook those red flags purely because they don't want to believe it. Because if they do, it means their whole, to your point, the story, their whole model that they've created around who they are and how they fit into their bubble is gone. Like, the bubble gets popped, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I have made some real bad mistakes, and accepting that. Yeah,
that's a hard.
Yeah, most people aren't going to do that.
And I think we're very aware that not everybody is perfect. And I've even heard the statement of, a relationship is just a decision of which problems you're willing to live with. Like, what set of problems you're willing to live with? Because nobody is perfect, and perfection is defined by the people in those roles. So if you're like, oh, if I go find somebody else, it's probably just going to be the same, because everybody's got something. So is it easier to deal with this because I understand?
It'll never, you know.
Yeah, I understand this set of things, and I can say that sometimes the risk is worth it.
I think it's probably better to reframe that to, you know, it's what are the problems you're willing to keep working on? Because you shouldn't just live with them. You know, if there are things you don't like about your partner, you got to tell them. Otherwise, because mid-30s, right? Hopefully live another 50 years together. If there is even something that I wake up every day and go like, oh God, I hate it when Steph does that. You multiply that every day for the next 50 years, what a waste. Have an uncomfortable conversation and go, you know, this is annoying me, and, you know, how, you know, tell me why you're doing this and those sorts of things, so that you can move past that. You're going to find more problems, yes, but I think it's better than living with a bit of resentment every day, you know, for 10, 15, 30 minutes a day, you're going, I fucking hate it how they do that. instead, when you can just go, hey, can I share something with you? This is my internal feelings that I don't like it when you do that. Can you share with me a bit more about why it is that you behave in that way, or do whatever it is? But God,
help me understand it.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting perspective, actually, because one of the questions I do ask some of my clients in a relationship, and they're like, I'll say to them, if your partner never changed and things stayed exactly as they are right now, would you be happy? Because as much as we love to think we have control over other people, we have no control over others.
Only person we control is ourselves.
We can control how we behave in that relationship. We can control our own personal growth. But ultimately, if your partner decides that I like who I am and I don't want to change, can you accept that? Because you cannot be in a relationship with someone that you do not accept and that you are bitter towards or that are frustrated with. But you have to be careful of, I guess, there's two toxic beliefs that can get people stuck in these relationships too. So there are people who think I can change you and they take on those project people, and they're the people that I think you need to be careful of thinking that everything that your partner does that you dislike, you can change, because mm-hmm. you cannot change other people. But then you also have to be careful of those people who you tell your concerns to and you let them know how that their behavior is affecting you, and they sit back and go, well, I've always been like this. I am who I am. You're never going to change me, so I'd take it or leave it, babe. And I can tell you right now, leave it. Don't take it. Unless you are totally happy and content and can see yourself not getting bitter with those behaviors, because they mean it when they say they're not going to change.
Yeah, and I think a few things were running through my head as you shared that. If you're an outsider and you can see toxic relationships and you're just like, well, why won't – generally it's like, well, why won't she just leave? You also can't change that person. So all you can do is support them and give them the space that they need to make the decision that they need in that relationship. And if you agree with it or not, it's got nothing – even if they're a loved one, all you can do is support them in that. And I mean, my grandmother has been in a relationship that is probably toxic for, I assume my grandparents do not listen to podcasts, for very, very many years. And that's the relationship she's decided. And I mean, I can look back, like I look at her and I'm like, well, why didn't you make the decision to leave? And she's got her reasons of why she decided to stay. And it, at the end of the day, it comes down to the individual in that relationship.
And that's a really good point too, actually, because it is possible to love and accept the person that your partner is and not need them to change. Mm-hmm. And I also have a family friend, actually, and her partner drinks a lot. Not to the point where he gets aggressive or he can't work, but he drinks a lot. And she said, I had a real struggle with that at one point in our marriage. I wanted to stop drinking. I just got so fixated on his drinking as such a character flaw. I wanted him to change it. Mm-hmm. And then she came to a realization that this is him. And if I want to have a long, happy, lasting relationship with this man, I need to just accept and not allow this to break us. Mm. And they have a really happy, long relationship. And it doesn't impact them. It doesn't affect them. Not that I think you should just put up with stuff that you're uncomfortable with. But again, it's about knowing yourself, knowing what your expectations are, what are you happy with? Are you not happy with? What can you accept? What can't you accept?
Yep.
And then working with and working out what that means for you together as a couple.
Yeah. And I think that's the important part. And, you know, I've also seen people in toxic relationships where the toxic person has made the decision to change on their own and they're now in good, happy relationships. So not to say that things are set, but again, Mon summed it up really nicely. You need to be able to figure out what you're willing to accept as an individual. And if the decision is to end that relationship, it's challenging. It's really hard. But if you're doing it for you and for the right reasons, it will be okay.
I should preface this and say that never, ever, ever should you accept any kind of behavior that puts you or your children at risk.
Yeah.
Or when there's really valid safety concerns. We haven't really talked about domestic violence and I don't feel like we need to go there,
no.
But we are veering on that topic. So I just want to kind of preface it that in no way, shape or form would I ever tell someone who is at risk or that their kids are at risk that you should learn how to validate and accept that behavior, because it's never acceptable. It's never your fault. And there are 100% so many support agencies out there that can support and help you. I know, Steph, you're affiliated with a few.
Yeah, I can pop some in, like, for Australia. I can pop the Australian helpline in the comments. But there's definitely a lot in your local area that can help. And if you're an instructor or a studio owner and you see these behaviors, or you have people come to you, because generally speaking, we do, we get a lot of disclosure. In our scope of work, probably the best thing we can do is help them with a risk assessment plan and refer them to the right agencies. So keep that in mind, because like I said, this whole conversation here started, a student did come to me and go, can you guys talk about this on the podcast? But I see it all the time and I hear it, and it's just comments, right? They're just small comments. They're not full conversations. But then we also get full disclosures at times.
Something else that actually that comment there just sparked as well is also, if you've had an abusive relationship or a toxic relationship, you also have your own confirmation biases on relationships. So don't just assume because someone's venting about their partner that their partner is toxic and controlling. And because sometimes we can make that mistake as well, where, oh, this
really
person,
good point.
I had someone do that to me with Jono once, who's like the least controlling person I've ever met in my life. He's the gentlest soul. If anyone's met my husband, you would agree with me. But I had a friend who had come from a toxic relationship. Yeah. And I was talking to her. Me and Jono had just combined our finances, and we had very different values around how we should spend our money and blah, 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 blah. And I was just venting to her like, oh, this is a really frustrating issue for us. And she was like, oh, that's a red flag. And she jumped full into like, he's controlling you, he's blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, wow, this conversation says so much about you. It's just so far off base. It's not even funny. Yeah. But I could really see how her experiences and her biases were really impacting her in that moment. So I don't know why I thought that was important, but just
no, I think it is important, because like coming back to my relationship anxiety, there were things in previous relationships I had seen, and I brought them, that confirmation bias, to this relationship, which made the start of this relationship challenging, right? Because I was like, ping, 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 like things are going to happen. And yeah, it impacted the relationship. So no, I think that's important, because there's definitely times that I sit there in the studio and I hear things. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sit well for me based on the information I know, but the relationship might be fine. Yeah. Like it might not even be, you know, a concern. So yeah, it's down to you as an individual and what you're willing to accept. And yeah, communication is key, but it's really fucking hard. So
it's really hard.
But small steps. Anything else we want to sum up with, guys? This has been this chat, we did say this could go wherever, and it definitely.
And I feel like it did kind of go all over the place.
We touched on many things, which is great. I think they're all really good pieces of information to share with the listeners. So anything you want to sum up with?
Just that if you do find yourself struggling to communicate, not just in a romantic relationship, but in any kind of relationship, work communication is difficult, communicating with family is difficult, parenting is difficult, there is definitely a lot of support and information out there. Reach out to someone who can help guide you through that, because it's really hard to reflect on your own situation.
You're
we all have our glasses on, and it's very, very difficult to do. So, yeah, there's definitely support out there if you need.
You're all good, Russ? Excellent. Thank you for tuning in on this very juicy is not the right word, but like there's a lot in this topic.
It's
Dense is a much better word than juicy. So thank you for tuning in. If you would like to connect with us on Instagram, of course, at uncovered.pd. Mon, where can people find you?
Social media at lifeincolor.cw, or you can contact me through my private practice page, www.lifeincolor-cw.com. Happy to answer any questions.
Ross, do you want to throw your handle down?
No.
I don't need your validation. Yes.
I don't want to get popular.
It's like social media. No. Anyway, until next time, we will see you soon. Thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode of the Uncovered podcast, I would absolutely love it if you could leave a review. As a thank you, I will send you our Addictive Pole Fitness Invert Bundle, the ultimate guide to helping you strengthen your inverts. It includes not one, but two invert conditioning videos with options for beginner, intermediate, and advanced, and a stretch video. To access this freebie, all you need to do is leave a review, share a screenshot of that review with uncovered@addictivepolefitness.com, and I will send you our must-have invert bundle straight to your inbox.